welcome to the Car, Sim and Race Driver Show, presented by Hugh Hattrick. Drive fast and try not to crash. Welcome to the Car, Sim and Race Driver Show with me, Hugh Hattrick, and my very special guest, Andrew Marr. It's good to see you tonight, Andrew, and to speak to you as well. We were going to try and do it live on Podbean, but we couldn't quite get it all to work. So this will go out as a podcast later on in the week, as well as a video on YouTube that you'll be watching now, because obviously by the time this is done, it will be YouTube that our viewers and listeners are watching. But so there we have it, our first Murrayism of the night. But we've got a new title, and it's called Let's Talk F1. So here we are. It's been an amazing year, actually, and it's not over yet. We've just seen Hamilton win his sixth world championship. It's been eventful. It's been tragic with the loss of Niki Lauda and of course Anton Hubert, who was killed at the F2 race in September at Spa. But it's had, I mean, in terms of Formula One, it has been really an enthralling season. We've had some great races. Probably the only exception was really France. That was a pretty dull race. But other than that, after France, it really picked up. What do you think? What's been your take of the year so far?
I've really enjoyed it. I've really enjoyed the racing. The bringing in new rules to try and bring better racing. But I think this year, like I say, apart from France, Paul Ricard, we've had a cracking year. We've had some incredible battles. There's been a mix of different people winning, fighting for the win, fighting for the podium. Verstappen's shown a lot of skill. We've seen Leclerc, this new revelation of this young lad bringing the fight to the four times world champion and, you know, stamping his authority over the old man. We've seen Vettel come back a little bit. We've had disobedience, you know.
Yeah, we've had everything, haven't we?
Let him past. He's got to catch me up first, you know, catch me if he can. what should we call that? Catch gate? He can catch me gate. Whatever. Even into the last race where Lewis said, box, no, I'm keeping going, you know.
Yeah.
Brilliant season of racing, I think, even with the cars being the way they are, not being able to follow. I think it's added a lot of spice, actually, to see the skill of the guys.
I think there's been some good overtaking. I think Hamilton's charged through. I mean, even, you know, he was, I think, third by the first corner or first couple of corners, and he was, when he was in the interview, he said, I was just focused on winning and getting first, and to come from fifth to first is pretty, when you had to overtake Ferraris, Red Bulls, the whole thing, and obviously Vettel's car let go and there were a few issues, but I just thought, you know, maybe it was going to be his day, and he almost got it against Bottas. It wasn't far away. And I thought, that's really something. But, you know, it's been an enthralling year. I think even since the second half, and also when the British Grand Prix was brilliant.
That was my personal favourite, actually. The British Grand Prix was my personal favourite.
Yeah.
Because a lot went on there where you really saw some people show their skill coming through.
Yeah. Perfect timing with pit stops. Yeah. That made it all come about.
It all just went like that. The team, the car, and the drivers on the day, fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
It's been good. Now, yesterday I did my live stream on Podbean and on YouTube, which was my rant about Lewis Hamilton's kind of mad environmentalism. And yeah, you're becoming an eco warrior.
A new cartoon. Disney's going to make a new cartoon. Lewis Hamilton, eco warrior. He'll get there faster than anybody. In his electric smart car.
or a sprout kind of powered Volkswagen Beetle. So. Exactly. Powered on gas. His own, you know. But the thing is,
I'm a huge Lewis Hamilton fan. I do like him. I watched him in 2008 in testing and at RS. I've got a video of that on YouTube on this channel. And it shows him hearing past. He was one of the first people we videoed as he came hearing through in his McLaren. And it was, I mean, he's a brilliant driver and I do have a lot of time for him. I just think it's quite funny and slightly ironic when they start going on about the environment, you know, and how to reduce their carbon footprint. And they're going to go to like 21 races in how many different countries, plus all this extra traveling. You know, the carbon footprint is going to be huge. Now, he has sold his private plane or his private jet, but I don't somehow see him sharing a plane on or sharing.
And several of his gas-guzzling cars, he sold a few of those as well.
No.
And he's, you know, so.
Can you see him going EasyJet or taking a ferry to you
know? I think he has claimed to travel commercial now. I would imagine he's not traveling EasyJet.
Yeah.
I would imagine it's. He's on the 747 first class.
And if he didn't reserve his seat, can you imagine he'll be sitting next to some hen party who's going off to Spain for the weekend.
Can I have another champagne, please? But make sure it's vegan. Oh, yes. I'm lying on my vegan bed. Now, I mean, we're laughing. We're taking the pee, I know. I don't... I mean, there's people saying, oh, what a hypocrite, what a hypocrite. Well, that's irrelevant. We're all hypocrites. Yeah. You know, my background is in not environment. I'm a chemist by trade. And I've done quite a lot of work with renewable resources and this kind of stuff. And the problem I have, because I'm a weirdo and I don't just believe things, and I'm not talking about whether climate change is happening. I think it is. I think there is things going on, you know.
Yeah, climate's always changed. That's yeah. It's whether or not we have that input into it.
What problem I have... Yeah. The problem I have... quite simply, I can break into two things. One, I was brought up not to waste. So when, you know, we're a wasteful society, and we have been for quite a while now. We America started it. We've caught up with it. You know, my dad and growing up, you wasted nothing. We had pots of tins, as I'm perhaps you did, of screws. In the sheds, because you never bought screws. You used screws you found somewhere else. Stuff like that. Just nothing ever went to waste. Yeah. And I think that's something we have dropped and lost in an idiotic way, that we think everything's going to last forever, and we just, oh.
We'll throw, but we throw it away after a few years.
But then on there's a second part to the way I look at these things, and that is that people look... or believe the wrong people, the wrong authorities, shall we say, on what is environmentally friendly. So, for example, simple example, the electric windmills. Now, I look up the North Wales coast, and there's a massive wind farm out there.
Yeah.
These things last 20, 25 years. It's not that long. They have to be maintained. They have to be built in the first place. There's massive boats going out there doing that. They're burning fuel. The actual equipment that's the engineering that goes into it is incredibly energy inefficient and wasteful and has lots of toxic things going into it. It's like the Toyota Prius. Somebody said it's this environmentally friendly car, but if you do a full life cycle analysis of it and a disposal and all that kind of stuff, it was one of the most environmentally unfriendly cars on the planet, because you've got all these poisons in the batteries, you've got all these poisons in the electronics and all this kind of stuff, and no one thinks of that. They just think, oh, well, it does 70 to the gallon and it's electric. And let's pretend it did 70 to the gallon. Clarkson found out it never did. Just like the i8, I think it was meant to do 130 to the gallon and he got 30 to it when he drove up to Whitby. Stuff like this. So,
mind you, was doing 140 all the way.
On the A1, I don't think so. Maybe for half a mile at a time on the A1. But yeah, the point I'm making is that there's a lot of people, they have a very simplistic view of what's wasteful, what isn't wasteful, and it's kind of great. Now, someone like Lewis Hamilton, he's like a Hollywood star.
Yeah.
And like all the other Hollywood stars, where they buy a Prius to make it look like they do something, you know, so they don't have the wrong image, bless. Oh, he probably really... I can imagine he sat there one day and gone, oh, no, this is really bad. I'm being an idiot. I should stop this and do that and do that. Great. You know, do that.
Yeah.
And I can understand him having a platform to tell other people what he thinks.
Yeah, yeah.
What bugs me is all the... It's like, well, okay, so a man who drives cars for a living...
Flat out, 200 mile an hour, burning as much fuel as he can.
Suddenly is telling me that he's an expert and this is how he should live. Yeah. And if there's people out there that want to follow his lead, great, do that. That's why when I listened to your broadcast before and really, you told me that we were going to talk about this, I thought I better read what he said because I don't actually care. I have some very strong views on waste society, but I think that it's a societal thing. It's like when you've got massive companies going out of their way to be as wasteful as possible if it makes them a good profit, and only when that profit gets hit do they care about any other way of thinking.
Yeah.
And then one guy says, I'm now a vegan. Okay, what about,
crazy and all the rest of it. But I did make a comment about his hairstyle, only because it's the kind of hairstyle I jokingly said that would do him proud in any kind of Whole Foods cafe. But it was that's what the kind of staff looked like.
Oh, normally, you're disappointed in you, I really am. But one of the forums, I think it was in the Telegraph or something like that, or in Motorsport website, and they had all these comments afterwards. And this is where I'm disappointed in so-called fans and the stupid comments. He said what he said. Who cares?
Yeah. I mean, exactly. It's a bit silly.
Somebody said, does he rap? And I'm thinking, what the hell's that got to do with anything? Then the next guy goes, oh, a racist. And I'm like, really? He asked if he raps. Oh.
People are easily offended, isn't it? But I think you're going to have tongue in cheek and just kind of just make a bit of a, it is a bit ridiculous. Because the funny thing was, Alonso basically said, what? What are you talking about, you moron? You can imagine them slapping him on the face if he had been there. We're here to race cars.
Best comment was Raikkonen. Kimi.
I didn't see his one. What did he say?
Classic Kimi style. I haven't got it in front of me, but he basically says something of the lines of, yeah, we should be more, environmentally friendly. We should look after the place a bit better. But we drive around in 1,000 horsepower cars and fly over the world to drive around in 1,000 horsepower to achieve what? what? Why are we doing that? He said, the way to fix that is just stop doing it because there's no other reason to do it other than we want to do it.
Exactly. They enjoy it and they want to win.
Yeah, they're doing it because it's there. They're doing it because other people watch it. There's no actual purpose to it other than you demand. And me and...
Yeah, demand for the service or demand for the appetite for the racing, isn't it?
The most sensible comment came from the mad Finnish man. Love him. He's off again.
I always remember that one when he was on the grid and he missed the anthem or he missed the something by Pele or something, whatever it was in Brazil or something. And Martin Brundle was on the grid walk and he caught up with him and he said, oh, you've missed the big interview with Pele. He said, yes, I was too busy. I was taking a shit. And so they couldn't be that on the TV, but it was done. It was always in the bloopers,
I like the drivers that swear on the thing. I really do. He's like Vettel. I quite like Vettel because he's.
I do. Yeah, he's funny. And he's. I think there's more character than.
Well, there needed to be because it got a bit sort of plastic,
And bland. Beige. Really bland.
A bit like this beige, But. Entity that is F1 has decided you must not swear. Get off.
I think that's why Verstappen is so refreshing, because he complains and he says all the stewards are idiots and what are they going to allow next, isn't it? Because he's had all those run-ins with Leclerc this year. I don't mind Leclerc, don't get me wrong. I think he is quick, but I think he's going to be slightly overrated. I don't know if you feel the same, but I just don't know. I mean, yes, he is very quick, and he's taken it for granted.
See, this is a problem I've had with a lot of drivers, is that, they're all fast, aren't they? I mean, they're all quick.
Yeah.
They wouldn't be there if they weren't quick. Even the ones that pay have to be fast enough as well, within a certain limit. But so when everything's so close, as it often is with these guys, it's like with Lewis. What is it that makes Lewis so good for 6 world championships? And he nearly, he nearly got his inaugural world championship. Missed by a small amount. What is it? As I was saying to you earlier, I've got the psychology of it all as well as the pure skill. There's a lot in there. And what makes Lewis as good as he is? What is it? And what makes Vettel as good as he is? There's it's interesting. So the thing about Verstappen, I'm not a great fan of Verstappen. I kind of am, and he's an incredible driver. You can see what he does that makes him special, which is quite nice. So when he was in Brazil and it was wet and he was going around the air, it was like watching Senna again.
Yeah, he was good, wasn't
it? Wet. Yeah. It's just like everyone else is sliding off and you're just going around, mate.
Yeah.
How are you doing that? But that's what you want. You want to see someone like that.
Yeah.
And you want to see, that's why we all love Ricciardo, because he just goes for it. I'm going down this guy.
I think he's really good. I think it's really unfortunate that Renault is just not there yet. And same with Hulkenberg, because I think actually he's underrated. I think he deserves a seat in F1.
Very much so.
More than people like Lance Stroll and that are just not really kind of there. And seemingly Kubica has been offered a drive in another team, but we don't know what the team is yet. Because he's finishing up with Williams, but he said he's been offered another seat elsewhere in Formula One. And I'm quite surprised.
He must be bringing a lot of money with him, then. He must be bringing a lot of money with him.
Because he struggled to cope with speed.
He was superb. He would have been a world champion. He would have been an incredible world champion. But then with the big accident, he's just not got it. Whatever it is that he needed, he hasn't got it.
His hands, isn't it? He did that thing with his wrists and
he lost it, didn't he? He lost his whole arm. But Leclerc, I mean, he's obviously as quick, if not a bit quicker than Vettel, in many circumstances at the moment with the car as it is.
Yeah.
But there's so many factors involved. You know, if a car suits, I mean, Button got a world championship, but the car had to be right. When he was partnered with Hamilton, it was an interesting watching them drive together. Sometimes Button was as fast, if not a little bit faster than Hamilton when the car was perfect for him.
Yeah.
But what Hamilton could always do was drive around the problems of the car.
Yeah. Yeah,
always fast. He used to win when Button was 10th.
Yeah, he was very consistent, wasn't he? And that was the thing.
Jack Stewart was the same, wasn't he? Jim Clark was the same. Fangio was the same. They could all drive. They flattened Schumacher. Apparently, they flattered the car. Alonso the same. They make more out of a bad car than somebody else might.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and they're just able to drive. They've got that mental strength that can make them think how to get around stuff and make it work.
Yeah. I mean, Verstappen, Ricciardo and Hamilton, they all have that sort of fighter. I'm going for this. That second corner going around Vettel, yes, his front tyres weren't switched on. But who else would have gone there? Who else would have gone Verstappen? Ricciardo, they would have gone there. They would have gone, I'm going around here. You look at Bottas, who's a fine driver. He's this fast driver. I've got a lot of respect. I like Bottas. He's a good guy.
Yeah.
But when you put them next to each other, Hamilton, even if they're as fast as each other, even if they're almost identical in times, one lap qualifying pace, Hamilton would always win. It's the same with Rosberg. He couldn't get past,
I mean, Rosberg did, I have to say, I think he did push Hamilton quite a bit. It took him a couple of years alongside him to get to kind of annoy Hamilton and to win that title. But he did definitely push him, and it was quite close. I think Bottas has never been anywhere near. And I was a little bit surprised when they renewed his contract, actually, because from the early part of this year up until, three quarters of the way through, he really wasn't doing that well. He not just had the bad luck, but I don't think he was, maybe slightly underperforming. And I thought there'd be better. What would be good would be somebody like Ricciardo in a Mercedes, because that would really push Hamilton massively.
But would it? I mean, think of 2007 when Hamilton came into Formula One.
Yeah.
Him and Alonso lost the World Championship by a point.
No.
To Raikkonen. Looked into the championship, basically.
He won in Australia, and that was a bit...
All through that year, Alonso and Hamilton were taking each other out, getting each other's way, double-stacking at pit stops, to pay each other off. It was like if one of them had been a Bottas, because when Alonso went the next year, you had can't remember his name now.
Oh yeah, who was the
Spanish guy?
Oh, it's gone. I know what you mean.
You know the one I mean. Again, another fine driver, but nowhere near a Hamilton. So what he did is he was fast enough to get McLaren in the points.
Aye.
Never bothered Hamilton. So he didn't take the points off of him. Whereas if you had a Ricciardo that wants to win a world championship or another Rosberg, they'd be taking each other off all the time, or they'd be fighting each other for points and somebody else would come along and win.
Yeah.
So I wasn't that surprised that Bottas stayed, because he was he's fast enough to be second, which is what they want. Perhaps they would like him to be second more often. You know?
I mean, I know he's very good, but I think, as you see, Hamilton is just so good. And he's got the experience now. And I think it's almost like the latter years of Senna's career, when he could just put in these incredible performances, like in that McLaren Ford in 1993, you know, winning in Australia, and was it Australia and Japan, the last couple of races of the season. And that car was nowhere near as good as the rest of the field, certainly not compared to the Williams, and yet he beat them. And if that was his last victory, it was in Australia in 93. And that's when he took Alan Prost onto the podium with him and to say, you know, good luck with his retirement kind of thing when Alan had won his title. But, you know, it was quite a thing. And similarly, Imola in 94, before he had that horrific accident, he'd actually said, he did a radio kind of recording out live to the fans and so on, and he basically said, come back soon, Allah, because he wanted to race against him, you know, and that was the thing. So they were actually quite good friends after all of that. I think they had a lot of respect.
Yeah, they sorted themselves out eventually, didn't they? But there was a lot of victims earlier, wasn't there?
So I think they were just so much, because, you know, I mean, Prost was huge and loved by the French, and then you had Jean-Marie Balestre, who was the head of the FIA, who definitely liked Prost over anyone else.
What a twonk. Oh, you know, God, I hated him.
He was terrible. He reminded me of a kind of head of the EU. He was that kind of, like, you know, totally unelected, you know, kind of living off the cream of the sport.
Rhetoric, lots of long words to explain why he was just favouritism to his French friends.
Yeah, it was really, really dodgy. So, and that was the thing. But it meant for an incredible season, you know, an incredible time, because you had Mansell, Senna, Prost, all these incredible drivers that went in one go. And you kind of knew you were witnessing something that you would never see again. I mean, the one race I've seen live, which was the Donington, the European Grand Prix at Donington in 93, where Senna won. I mean, that was an incredible, incredible race, and I'll never forget it. It was my 18th birthday, so I went along and got it for a present with my mate, and it was just phenomenal. You know, you could do the noise of the cars, you could see everything. You could physically see them move, you know, and you could see the shoulders and the whole thing. And I remember watching them, because we were at the thingy chicane, the kind of loop at the end, where Schumacher went off, just kind of, it was a kind of left, right. And as they changed gear, you could see his fingers on the steering wheel of the paddles, and then his head would move, you know, back, because it was such a clunk, you know, because those times it wasn't like the really quick ones that they are now and smooth.
Well, the double clutch now, so you don't get any.
Yeah, there's no. It's almost instant, isn't it?
You don't do that. It is instant. They blend one in as they blend the other out. You see.
It was incredible, and so you saw everything. You saw the movement. You saw the how difficult it was, and the energy they were putting into it. It was just phenomenal.
If anything, that's what's missing now. I mean, I know they're changing the cars to try so that you can, you know, the aerodynamics. It's funny, because somebody was saying on the Five Live footage and stuff like this, they were talking about the new rules that are coming.
Oh, yeah, for 2021.
I said a few years ago they should be using more aerodynamics underneath the car. Well, I said it 20-something years ago, because I worked that much out. But if you've got the wings are always going to be affected by the wake, but if it's going under the car, it's not. Now they're finally doing that. Great. Hopefully we'll be able to get cars following each other better to get a bit more closer racing. That's great. But what they're not changing is that we can't see, and I go back to what I was saying, what makes Hamilton better, what makes, you know, in those days you could see what they did, so you had more chance of seeing what they were doing to see how they were better. Does that make
sense? Yeah, I had it the more work
you
they
can't
did.
See anything now. And the TV coverage, I'm very disappointed with, because even little things, and again, I'm a nerd, so I notice these things, but I find it frustrating. They're shots of the cars as they go past. They zoom right in. And then when they've gone past, they zoom back out again. You can't see the car. You see a wheel, or you see the side pod, or you see... You can't see what they're doing. They're swapping angles all the time, so you can't see...
Yeah, it's too many.
If they just were not quite so tight on the cars, you'd be able to at least see what's going on, and you could see if they're on the slide and they're catching it, and you go, oh, that's amazing. That's like 160 mile an hour, and they've caught a slide. You can't. It's almost like the directors are going, oh, this is snazzy. Let's try this flash trick. No one's thinking, what do you actually need to see when you're watching a race on the telly? You need to see the race.
Ah, you want to see the action and on board, because that was the big thing. The on board was quite a new thing 20 years ago, or you know, it was fuzzy and it crackled up quite often. But it was so exciting because you saw that work. I remember watching the 1986. Or it shows you how old I am, because in that I watched. I think it was a live recording, but my parents wouldn't let me watch it live because it was in the middle of the night. It was the Australian Grand Prix from Adelaide in 86 when Mansell's tire blew. And that was one of the first races I ever saw. And I remember I'm sure they recorded it in the middle of the night or whatever it was, it'd be early in the morning. And I think they did it live because I'm sure I had an old VHS videotape of it. And I'd convinced my father to put it up to I think he was up or whatever, and he recorded the thing. So he said he would record it. Or in those days, you may have been able to even put a timer on and record it. In 86, you probably could have done. So I remember watching it. And it was just fantastic, you know, seeing, you know, I was so keen on the interior shots because that's when you saw him holding this little steering wheel with about three buttons on it and then doing all the other wee bits. And
you could see the change gear, you could see him do everything. Well, that's because now they've got cameras in the nose and you can see, and all right, you get a sense of things moving around, but they spend 5 minutes with a camera in the nose and you can see nothing. They have a camera in a curb, five cars go over it. What are you seeing there? You're seeing what it feels like to be a bug, you know. And then they spend, this is my person, I shout at the telly for this one. They'll show, I mean, I'll pretend to be that. I'm in the pits now.
they are annoying when you see some mechanic or some guy looking in the screen.
Someone in the crowd. We want to see the crowd. And they don't do it for a minute. 10 seconds or 5 seconds. They do it for half an hour. And then they don't show racing from midfield in the back of the pack. They said there's no action in Formula One. What a load of rubbish. Yeah. It's all happening in the midfield. It's all happening at the back. They're fighting each other. It's close racing. They're really getting stuck into racing. Yeah. What are they show? The guy at the front and then someone in the crowd with the pretty girlfriend.
They should have a Grosjean camera because that would be... it's in the wall.
We're going Grosjean now. Crash cam.
That'd be Martin Brundle. He would say, we're straight to the scene of the accident.
Where's Grosjean getting out of what's left of his car?
He's getting a bit of a reputation, a bit like Andre de Cesaris.
he went as the... I mean, before Grosjean, you had the likes of Takuma Sato... Senior Nakajima and all that kind of stuff. Who just I mean, if you were lapping them,
you gave them plenty of speed.
Yeah, because they would just go, someone coming past. kill him again. And I used to smash up some Sato. I used to call Takuma Sato because he used to see. I had an old. I've not played many Formula One driving games, but I had an old PC one called F1. I loved it because I'm the world champion of that, you know. I had everything set on automatic apart from the steering, but I'm still the world champion. And I took Schumacher off several times on purpose because I was indestructible and I didn't like him. But I remember my favourite race was Hockenheim because I've been there. And also it's got these massive long straights. And I'd used to set it up with no drag, and I would go down the inside on a corner and use the other cars to get round it. That's pretty much the way Takuma Sato used to drive.
Yeah, I didn't get black flagged.
Down the inside, never mind brakes, you don't need them. Just down the inside and do that and hope for the best. And that's how we used to do it. Now, Grosjean, he took it to the next level, didn't he? He didn't have to turn a steering wheel. He just smashed somebody up the rear. Brakes. Spa, first corner, over the top of Alonso.
He is driving kind of like a Frenchman, and in that way of the French do drive with enthusiasm.
He gets out. So, Roman, what happened? I don't really know what happened. We all do. You got in the car, mate.
His boss now from Haas, what's his name? Is it Snyder or...
Gunter Schneider.
He's brilliant.
I love him.
They had this thing where they were listening to the radio all the time, and he just basically said, stop complaining and get on with the drive, you know?
I love him.
It was fantastic. You need people like that.
Oh, yeah. And he's got a great sense of humour. I mean, you can just imagine him in the background. I don't care, kill you! But he kept him on. He should have given Hulkenberg one of the drives.
Yeah, I was so surprised when they re-signed him. I thought, what? Maybe it's just the entertainment factor.
They've got the money to fix the cars. That's
the parts department is, has gone
now, the roof. Can we talk about Verstappen a little bit?
Of course.
Because if we're talking about crashing into people. Now, I have a problem with Verstappen. I do. I seriously have a problem. I mean, I get that he's 8 or whatever, how old he is. But he's acting like he's 8. This is the problem I have. Now, it's not like Russell or Leclerc and this kind of stuff where they were going, oh, he's so mature and all this kind of stuff. What he's doing is he's incredibly exciting to watch. He's a seriously good racing driver. Don't ever think I don't think that. But I think he also has a bit of a, he likes this wheel-to-wheel banging action until it happens to him. Yeah. And then he doesn't. Now, there's all these people saying about Lewis Hamilton and Verstappen, and I think it's a very simple case. I put on one of the Facebook things I hardly look at anymore, that in defence of Verstappen, Lewis was considered out of control at the beginning of his career, if you remember. Yeah, he had a couple of little close calls. He whacked into the back of Webber once, and Webber called him a beep, and all this kind of stuff, because he was aggressive, and he got past people, and people didn't like it. And he went for gaps that nobody else would go for, which is why I compare him to Verstappen. They're both very similar. But it's not like he's got old and stopped doing it. He's just at the front anymore, so he didn't need to do it as much. So when he went past Verstappen in Mexico, and Verstappen did what he did, and he was just being Hamilton. Yeah. But Verstappen didn't really like it, did he? Because he's like, that's really dangerous. Well, it's what you do to it. Verstappen, for a long time, has been moving 3 or 4 times in braking areas, which is really naughty when you're doing 100-something mile an hour and people die. No. And some of the stuff he's come out with about, do we have to talk about safety and all this kind of stuff. This is the problem. He doesn't see the danger. Maybe it's his age. You know, it's okay for him to move several times, but if somebody did it to him, and there are some out there that are doing it back to him. Yeah. You know, he's nearly taken Raikkonen off a few times over the past few seasons in what I consider incredibly dangerous moves in braking areas. You know, the reason why the one move rule was brought in was to stop that kind of stuff going on so you didn't smash into somebody.
There was a very good shot of it was when Schumacher was still driving, and it was was it 2012? I think it was in Monza, or it was one of those years, and Schumacher and Hamilton were finally together and they were racing, and Schumacher was doing all his old moves, which were proper Senna style, that era of moves that were pretty dodgy, and they were weaving and all sorts as they were going at 200 miles an hour, and at the end they said to Hamilton, what do you think, was it not a dodgy move and so on. I really loved it, because you knew it was proper racing, because that was the era. I mean, if you could survive with Mansell, Senna, Prost and Schumacher, you were doing pretty well. And then and Hamilton had been able to more than keep up and compete with them, So it was pretty good going. I think they're right about the braking areas, so you don't want people crossing in, because then someone comes in and they could just smack into them very easily.
Yeah. Um,
that, but no, it's true. And I mean, I thought, you know, Hamilton's win in Mexico was fantastic. I mean, that was a great, great run. And to get second in the US Grand Prix from fifth is pretty good going. Very few drivers start fifth and sixth in a race nowadays and end up winning it. You know,
I think they've said, the stat they said on Channel 4 anyway, it's either Channel 4 or Radio 5, was that no one's won it from lower than third.
And he
came that close to winning that race, a couple of more laps, and he would have won that race. I'm glad Bottas did, actually, because I think he did a cracking job.
He did drive it well.
Good Hamilton was second, you know, to win his title, because in the past few years he's been like something's gone wrong and he's ended up back down the field a little bit, hasn't it?
But then that
podium, and that was nice.
There was that incredible race in Germany last year. In 2018, when Hamilton won from 14th on the grid and got to first, because that's when Vettel crashed.
That's when Vettel came up on the corner.
And Hamilton. I mean, I was watching that and I was just enthralled, because you just thought he's getting closer and closer. He was getting up the field. He was getting there, and then things just went his way, and he managed to do it. And I thought that was a stunning victory. To do that, it's almost like when Jenson Button won in Hungary. I think he started, was it 12th? Or something way down the field in Hungary.
Was this his first win?
In 2006, I think it was. And that was an enthralling, again, incredible victory. And that's what Mansell did. Mansell not start about 12th or 13th in Hungary. And that's when he overtook Senna to win.
You can't overtake in Hungary. Hungary's like us, Jamaican in a circle.
But they did.
But this is the thing, you see. This is the ones where you see that they've got something special. There's something going on there where they can find the grip, or they see the place, they can do it. Yeah, they're the special ones. They're the special ones. I mean, we were talking about the Sixth World Championship and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And everyone's doing that comparison thing, who's the greatest, is he the greatest of all time, will he get seven, all this kind of stuff. I mean, there's a few things like Schumacher's seven world championships. If Senna had survived, he wouldn't have had seven world championships.
Yeah, exactly. Senna would have won a good couple more at least, you know.
Yeah, and I love what Schumacher said about his, when he passed Fangio, and when he passed, and Hamilton was the same. They both, I think, realised that Fangio was something else.
Yeah, for the success at the start was huge.
What he did, the way he did it, in the cars he did it.
And how old he was.
39 when he started in that. When F1 started, he was 39.
Yeah.
You know, he got a fastest lap in his final year. He was 46 years old. He's the oldest to get a fastest lap.
Yeah.
Alberto Ascari was the next one. Uh-huh. And these guys, I went and I got a few stats. And the thing, fastest laps. Schumacher got 77 fastest laps. Kimi Raikkonen and Hamilton are the next at 46. Okay.
Yeah.
And then you've got Prost, who had 41, Vettel with 38, and that's the top five. 10th is Fangio, 23 fastest laps.
Yeah.
But 25% was the conversion rate for Schumacher.
Yeah.
Raikkonen, 14%.
Yeah.
Hamilton, 18%. Yeah. So, of the races he's done, Prost 20%, Vettel 16%. Have a guess what Juan Manuel Fangio's fastest lap rate of laps he's done.
Probably about 50%.
45%.
Yeah.
And this was in the days, I mean, he was known for winning races as the slowest you could possibly go.
Yeah, that's true, wasn't it?
Because in those days, your car blew up.
Yeah.
So, very like Hamilton, because I think this is one of Hamilton's strengths, is he's been lucky in one sense, but also the way he drives. He looks after his tyres beautifully. Which a lot of the stuff, I think Hamilton's, you know, his first two seasons, you saw the man on fire.
Yeah.
You know, you saw this nuts and go, I'm going to win. And that's why he lost the first world championship. He still could have won it if he'd have calmed down a bit.
Oh, I bet in China. I mean, really, it was his team who told him to come in too early when he was actually doing quite well. You could have stayed out.
The Hamilton of now would have said, no, I'm coming in.
Yeah,
the tires are shot. I'm coming. He would have told them. He wouldn't have asked.
But,
you know, it's his first season. He's with Ron Dennis, who's an arse. And, you know, and all that kind of stuff. Then I think the best thing that happened to him was those years where he was partnered with Button in a slightly uncompetitive McLaren.
Yeah.
Still winning races.
And when he nearly won in 2010, he nearly won the World Championship.
He had to fight for it.
Yeah, he crashed with Massa at Monza, coming into one of the chicanes, and he was going to be. The McLarens were faster than the Ferraris by this point, and they were closing up. And if Hamilton had got those 25 points, would have put him right up there. And then because I was in Prague on the next race when they were in Singapore, and he crashed with Webber in Singapore, and that took him out there. So that 50-point gap was what really, although he finished about fourth or fifth, it wasn't by many points. But if he had those 50 points, he would have won, because by the end of the season, he was there.
I think that he matured so much in those years that he learned. So I think he must have learned quite a bit from Jensen, because Jensen was always very good with strategy and looking after his tyres.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the skills that he's used to very great effect, as well as his natural born racer and pure speed, he got in those years in McLaren. And then when he got into a car as good as the Mercedes, just puts him up there. You know, he's been so consistent and so reliable in finishing races. You know, the biggest problems he had when he was with Rosberg is that his car kept blowing up.
If
Hamilton's car kept blowing up, because it blew up more than Rosberg's did.
Yeah, certainly. And also he had that terrible start to the 2014 series, wasn't it? When he was on the first lap and his car gave up with it. And that's when the new turbo hybrids that were not only quiet, you could hear the crowd cheering, because they were so, you couldn't hear the engine. And I remember Brundle and him saying, "What's happened to the engines? You can hardly hear anything, you know." it was something. I think they are louder now, at least it's one thing.
Yeah, they're a bit louder, aren't they? I like sixes. I like the sound of a six-cylinder engine, but the turbo obviously stronger.
Yeah, and they don't rev that highly. And you know, before you had like 18,000 RPM. I think now it's only about 12,000 or so.
I actually prefer the slightly lower, because I've been there live with the V10s, and they hurt.
And they were incredible, weren't they?
They hit. I mean, they were 19,000 RPM, those V10s.
But they were incredible. They were. I remember going to Goodwood and hearing them in Goodwood, Goodwood Festival of Speed. And we had the Red Bull, the Toro Rosso, the Ferrari, and the Renault. And one by one, they all started up. And they're all V8s, those ones. And they just sounded incredible.
I heard the V8s at Wembley, the new Wembley.
Race
of Champions.
Oh, yeah.
They're quite loud, aren't they? They don't sound very loud on the television, but they are.
The V8s were amazing, because they had the V6, they had a Mercedes F1 car that went up the track, but it just didn't sound. Okay. It was like, wah, you know, it just didn't have that same crazy high revs.
You know, we're talking about the environmentally friendly stuff and this kind of thing. You know, Formula One is this sport that burns this and does that and all that kind of stuff. But there's things. This is what I'm saying about looking at things in a particular way. The hybrid technology that's so good in modern cars today comes from these Formula One cars. If these guys had not developed those cars in the way they had, there's technology, like the turbo technology that the Mercedes are using is superb. It's incredible.
It's the third less fuel.
Something a friend of mine and I were talking about in the 90s, actually, a guy called Dom, and he's an engineer, and he wanted to know if I thought it'd be a good idea if you could have an electric supercharger. And I said, well, theoretically, yes. But you need to have the motor and the power and the electricity and generating electricity and the weight and all this kind of stuff. That's what they're doing on these Mercedes. That's what they are. I don't know about the Ferraris, but I know the Mercedes, they're an electrical supercharger as opposed to a turbo supercharger, a turbine.
Yeah.
But there's the impeller for the turbo is the generator.
So what you do is you
produce a load of electrical energy. You have your battery pack and all that kind of stuff, as well as the other ways of producing electrical energy. And you've got an electrical supercharger that the computer tells when it's going to go. This is why they, unlike the old turbochargers, there's no lag.
Yeah, and they don't blow up quite as often.
They never slow down. They spool up at the speed of light when the computer says so. So they have maximum torque, bang. Now, the efficiency gains in that is huge, as well as the power. So 1.6, what was it, 800 horsepower, something like
that? I just wish they would do maybe a V. For me, the best thing would have been, even if they brought it to, say, a 2-litre V8 or something, but a 2-litre V8 hybrid. So you've got a great sounding engine with the hybrid tech, which actually would help bigger, power, more powerful cars do better consumption. You know, you would, it would, I mean, if you can get a third less on a 1.6, could you get a quarter less on a 2-liter V8 hybrid? You know, could you, is it, I don't know how it would exactly work, but what's the potential? But then that would transfer to the cars today. So it means you still get your incredible performance cars.
And that's why I don't like a lot of this capping of you know, the F1 teams are brilliant at coming out with this amazing technology that we can then use later. And that's really what they should be doing. Instead of telling us to still stop eating cows, they need to start going, well, or rules to say you're not allowed to. I mean, I've got one of the things they're saying about these new regulations that are coming in is common parts,
for some of the bits, aye.
I overheard one of the parts that's going to be common is the brakes. They're only allowed to change the pads so many times. They've got to last longer. That's the stupidest idea I've ever heard. It's a safety item.
Yeah, because you're going to think, I mean, you think we need to have a fresh set every time or make it all work, isn't it? You know, but...
They want the racing closer, okay? So they're trying to artificially make the racing closer.
I've got no brakes, though.
Exactly.
For once, it wasn't Grosjean.
Oh, no. Finally, we can all do a Grosjean. You two can smash into the back of the guy in front.
Yeah, my brakes are made out of cow hooves. You know, we've recycled the cows now.
This could go into F1 parlance. I've done a Grosjean, team. I've done a Grosjean. My brakes are gone. But when they got the Pirelli tyres and they told them, make them so they fall apart. They did it to try and get better racing. And what it made was worse racing, because what happens now is they fuel save and they tyre save, so they don't really race. What's going to happen when they have got to look after the brakes for the whole time?
Well, the fuel saving is terrible. I don't think it's happened quite as much now. In the first few years, you got a lot of it, that, which is so dull. But at least it's a bit better now.
You can't race because you've used too much fuel. And Hammy was better at that than Rosberg. I remember.
They used to show it. Remember, they used to say who'd used what. And I don't know why they don't do that now, but they used to show how much fuel they'd use.
They show everything else.
How many
graphics can they put? The blooming Americans.
Oh. I think what's funny is, since they've taken away the grid girls and all that kind of stuff, you know, in the old days of Murray Walker and James Hunt, it was brilliant because, you know, they'd always look at in Monaco, you know, a lady in her bikini on the boat or something, and they'd make a completely inappropriate money would be trying to say something that was broadcastable, and it was brilliant. Now they're not allowed anything, you know. Now it's all so kind of formatted to kind of, you know, not offend anyone.
To even it out, they need a bunch of fat blokes on a boat in some speedos.
Yeah, some F1 team owners or something like
that. Well, get some muscly guy there for the girls. We're trying to get more girls in. Not the girls again. Don't like that. Too many muscles. Don't like them.
As long as they're not pink-haired girls that have the, you know, that are being offended at everything. You know, I'm happy with my weight or something like that.
I had this image of a grandma in a leopard skin with pink hair. Have you seen the film Last Vegas?
Where they got Yes, I think I have.
Where they're judging the bikini. You got this Robert De Niro, Kevin Kline, Michael Douglas, and...
Morgan
Freeman.
I have seen that.
Judging the competition of all these bikini people at this in Las Vegas. And then this old woman comes in with purple hair. And that's what they need. Need a bit of that. That's what the image you gave me when you said women with pink hair. Anyway.
How did we get onto that? But it was
I went on about the technology. They keep coming up with these ideas to try and make the racing better.
Yeah.
My point is that there's plenty of good racing out there. It's just they never show it on the telly.
Yeah.
And they also go to France, which doesn't help.
Yeah, that track is really... It could have been amazing. I mean, Paul Ricard has an incredible history, but I don't like all these blue and yellow lines everywhere. It just doesn't... It looks off-putting. Yeah, I know, give him an epileptic fit.
How about
you looking at that? You know, it's not a kind of...
I've got an idea. You get 20 Grosjeans and you give them bumper cars. Paul Ricard. That would make the French Grand Prix brilliant.
Yeah.
And because they're all French, it'd be packed.
It only cost €8 to get in, you know.
That is a French victory.
Better still, you know.
10 Grosjeans in Citroen 2CVs, right?
Yeah.
And then 10 other drivers from other countries driving minis. So, and the trick, you've got to get to the end of the race without being taken off by a Grosjean. 100 laps. It takes about three days. It's like a French cheesy version of Death Race. See, Ross should employ me. Never mind. We should be doing this. Ross Brawn, you know, we love Ross Brawn. That's a point, actually. It's a good question I want to ask you. Do you think Ross Brawn's been written out of Formula One history?
I mean, there's so many of them now, though, in that whole kind of Liberty group and in the team group, and it's kind of complicated
I'm talking about when they talk about stuff that's gone on in the past, don't even mention him. Who started the Mercedes team?
Yeah, I mean, it was the Brawn F1. They have done a few. Well, Sky have done a few things on him, and kind of, you know, because Jensen was reliving his, he drove his car from 2009 a few months ago, because that was 10 years. And that was quite a good show. So then they interviewed Ross Brawn. But yeah, it's kind of, I'd actually prefer it when it was Bernie doing it, to be honest, because you may have agreed with him or not, but at least he kind of did his own thing. And then it was kind of, you know.
He would have loved our idea of 10 Grosjeans in 2CV. And
he wouldn't have said, he would have said, forget them, getting rid of the grid girls and all of that. He would have said, we need more. You know,
he would have had somebody shoot whoever it was, said the opposite. He would have gone, oh, yes, yes, a very good idea. Bang! Yeah, he was a scary man. Seriously scary
man. Yeah, he could get things done.
He was already going towards the idea of having guns anyway, because he started, you know, you can have like wet bits of the track and the audience decide which bit, didn't he? So yeah. I reckon the next bit is you've got electric shocks. and then you could have, like in the Star Wars, where they've got the Sandmen and the gun shooting at them as they go past. I reckon that's where he was going, mate.
Making going right into the thing. But when you think, though, he actually built it. I mean, he made Formula One so successful and made it like nothing else. There was no other sport like it. I mean, you've got IndyCar, you've got other race series, but there's nothing like Formula One.
And I fear they will ruin it. I fear that it's going. I mean, the Americans are very good at creating a show. They do a very good job of making a show when you're there. I admire that. I really do. So, you know, things like Baja Racing and the Indy 500, all this kind of stuff. It's a massive big show. And I'd love to go to something like that just for the spectacle, you know?
Yeah.
But Formula One isn't just about that.
It has a kind of European character, doesn't it? That only you kind of. It needs that. I mean, yes, it can sometimes be a little bit dull here and there, but when it's good, it's incredible, and it's real, and it's not fake. You know, I think that's it. It has to be done properly.
The Mexican guy. I mean, this is an American. I know it's Mexico, but it's kind of an Americanism in the way they go about these things. When they're on the podium and they've got the car coming up through them and running around, and I'm thinking, and this is the sort of behaviour Hamilton does, where people start going, "Oh, what's he doing?" When he ran around and got all that.
The atmosphere
that shows his
is incredible. Yeah, in that bit where they have all the grandstands, it's like the baseball field or something.
That was great. That was really good.
That's a great design, and that works incredibly well.
But did you see the Mexican fella in the mask and everything trying to do the selfie? And they're basically going, get off.
I heard about it. I didn't see what happened. He came onto the podium.
Stream it. You've got to get on Channel 4. No, unless it's gone already. But there was a bit. Let's see if it's on YouTube.
I'm sure it'll be on YouTube.
This guy is standing there. You don't even know who he is. He's dressed in some costume.
Yeah.
And he's got a camera on a selfie stick. And he's trying to put his arm around them to get in the photo. And they're basically kicking him to get off.
Oh, was that? Because Lewis Hamilton and Vettel or something tried to move him or something, didn't they?
They were like, get off. Who are you? I thought that was brilliant. It's that we're just driven 200 miles at 180 miles an hour. Who are you? Like a hike, pal.
So some Mexican cartel member or something, but he was probably there. But oh, it's
we know why Perez is still in F1.
Yeah, he brings a lot of money into the sport.
Yeah, but where does that money come from? I'm saying nothing. Don't shoot me.
But no, it's something. It's something. Well, on that note, we better call it a night. But look, it's been a pleasure as always, Andrew, to have you on the show. And we must do it again very, very soon, anytime at all. And to all our listeners and viewers, thank you so much for joining us today. And you can give us a like or subscribe to our channel. Or you can even leave us a comment whether you liked it or whether you thought you didn't like it. It's up to you. But we've got our famous motto on the Car Sim and Race Driver Show, which is, of course, drive fast and try not to crash. And we'll see you soon. Bye just now. At cardioadvisor.co.uk, we can help you save thousands of pounds on your next new car or van. And we can also source second-hand cars as well. And we can save you money on car rental, whether it be in the UK and abroad. Just click our rental link on the website. And we'll give you a free gift if you trade in your car with We Buy Any Car using our special website link. So go to the website now and see how much you can save. And it's back to the show. Thanks for listening.